With me here in our Washington studio is CBS News correspondent Bruce Morton, who's covered the impeachment story from its inception on the House side, who has tonight heard the president declare his intention of resigning and who has since been seeking reaction. Bruce?
Well, the people whom I've talked to this evening, Neil, have by and large liked the speech. They thought it was gentle, magnanimous, leaving on a graceful note. Mr. Nixon did not in the speech address himself to any of the things that were, either of the things, I should say, that were worrying the Congress today. The question of what becomes of the impeachment process or the question of immunity. And in those areas, the reaction, because he didn't really go to either of those subjects, remains pretty much unchanged. Carl Albert has been saying all day that he doesn't think the impeachment process needs to go any further, that the Judiciary Committee ought to finish its report, lay out the case on the record, but there's no point in a vote, no point in a formal impeachment, consequently no point in a Senate trial. Sentiment in the Senate and House seemed to be weighted before the President spoke against the idea of the Congress, at least, trying to do anything about immunity for him, and that remains true. Republicans, I think, would generally say that it's going to be a little easier to campaign this fall. They and a number of Democrats think this really removes Watergate as an issue. In other words, a freshman Republican running for Congress in the 12th District and wherever doesn't have to worry that his opponent is going to ignore him and run against Richard Nixon and Watergate. That's down the drain now. Gerald Ford assumes the presidency as Mr. Clean, and that's a help.
One of those you talked to tonight, was it Roger Morton?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Secretary of the Interior. There's a feeling that he may play an increasingly important role in a Ford administration. Did he give any indication of that tonight?
He said he talked to Vice President Ford today, that the Vice President had asked him to stay on in the cabinet and that he would, that he would be happy, as anybody would, to undertake any additional jobs that were offered, any additional responsibilities. And he had the feeling that I think, although I haven't talked to him, he is general among cabinet members, that this is likely to be a more cabinet-y administration than President Nixon's was. Less reliance on White House staff, more reliance on the men who are supposed to be in charge of the departments. The phrase he used was, this is going to be an exciting time for the cabinet.
The feeling was, among those informed observers during this day, that it would be a more open administration, was the phrase being used.
Well, I think so. That's Ford's whole tradition. He comes from the Congress. He's used to being buttonholed by colleagues in the House, by reporters in the Speaker's lobby, and he's used to talking to them when they tug at his shoulder and say, hey, wait a minute.
We recall that when he was first nominated to be Vice President, he made an appearance in the House radio gallery and said, if you will let me, I'll come back quite often, words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been very approachable as Vice President.
Yes, I would look for more news conferences. I'd look for more contacts, not just with reporters. I think we sometimes think that we're the only people who are involved in openness, and that's not true. But more appointments with people outside, more contacts with folks, with reporters, with government officials who aren't on the White House staff, just a wider range generally.
Bruce Morton, thank you very much. And back in New York, Reed Collins, Charles Osgood.
We're here, and we were reading just another statement that we mentioned. One of the senators some time back, a congressman who had to, or felt he had to sue at the chief executive to get congressional business done. And Senator Kennedy, the Democrat of Massachusetts, has said the president's resignation clearly is in the best interest of the nation. I'm sure Congress and the country will close ranks behind President Ford as America enters a period of nation healing and reconciliation. And those words from Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts.
So far it seems, Reed, as if virtually all of the reaction to what the president has said has been in the same spirit that the president's own statement was, and that is in the Lincolnian spirit of malice toward none and charity toward all. There really has been no bitterness. We've heard nobody say he had it coming or anything of that kind. In California, Governor Ronald Reagan, who has long himself been considered a presidential prospect, talked with reporters about the resignation of Mr. Nixon.
I think the president made the right decision for the country. I think when finally it became apparent that the outcome of such an impeachment would be a foregone conclusion, I then, as someone editorialized the other day, to go through the process simply for the sake of going through it didn't make much sense.
Governor Ronald Reagan of California. Reap?
The Reverend Dr. Carl McIntyre, a fundamentalist preacher and formerly an ardent Nixon supporter, has said that he's disappointed in the speech because the president did not ask the nation, he says, for forgiveness.
It was not what we expected or what we should have had. There was no sense of shame or guilt or humiliation on his part. He didn't ask the American people to forgive him. I feel that he actually insulted the moral conscience of this great nation, which was expressing itself in the Congress and which forced him to his action.
The Reverend Dr. Carl McIntyre, who has in the past at least been a former supporter of President Nixon.
Many, if not most Americans, watched or listened to President Nixon's speech tonight. In San Francisco, CBS News correspondent Richard Threlkeld asked people in the street how they felt about Richard Nixon's resignation.
Mr. Nixon seemed to say that he wanted to heal the wounds of the country. Did you get that impression of the speech? Was it a kind of conciliatory speech?
I would say so. I'd say he was rather sincere. I feel that way. To me, it's an American tragedy.
In what way?
Well, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it's a tragic turn of events that this happened. It's like somebody in the family, not that I support him or don't support him, but somebody in the family, it's our president, it's your president, it's my president. It's just a tragic affair.
You feel sad at what he did. Do you feel happy now that he is out?
I don't think it's something you feel happy over. I'm glad he's not the president. I'm not happy that he had to resign or jubilant about the situation.
Have you been able to cope with all the developments today? You've seen the speech. You knew it was coming. What's your own feeling?
Well, I think, first of all, I think I'm kind of, well, I guess taken in by, overtaken by the whole thing. I think that it was a sad turn of events that he had to resign, and personally I think that the speech tonight was adequate as far as the Senate, the leaders in the Senate that wanted him to admit guilt and so forth. I don't think that would have served any purpose. I think that by judging personally what I feel and the way that I think the other people felt by the sighs of relief that were let off when he did say that he was resigning, I think that that was totally adequate.
CBS News correspondent Dick Threlkeld with reactions from some people on the streets of San Francisco.
And so we've been discussing the resignation of the president who made his will and wishes known an hour and a half ago in a speech to the country. It took him just 15 minutes to complete the address. It took him only 60 seconds at the top to tell us what he intended to do, which was resign the office of president at noon tomorrow Eastern Time, at which time the president-designate, the vice president, Gerald Ford, will take the oath of office there in the Oval Office, and he will become number 38. And it's as simple as that, Charles. It seems to me that the great weight of the moment has sort of escaped us in the relative simplicity and grace with which it all really happened. Neil Strausser?
We have one of our Republicans in the Senate looking ahead a bit to the political future. I'm sure you have noticed the comments of Senator Edward Brooke of Massachusetts, who was one of the first Republicans to call for the resignation of Mr. Nixon, who now is looking at Gerald Ford and saying if Ford is able to curb inflation and improve the economy, and if he continues the Nixon-Kissinger foreign policy, Brooke says, and we quote, no Democrat will be able to defeat him in 1976 because the country will be so grateful. We have a comment also from a member of the House Judiciary Committee, which, as you recall, last week completed its work on three proposed articles of impeachment. This is Brooks, not Brooke, Jack Brooks of Texas. And here's what he said about Mr. Nixon's resignation and announcement of plans to resign tonight.
It's my feeling, as one of the most ardent believers in the impeachment, that removal from office is the basic requirement of impeachment, and the basic penalty. I think that he has resigned. I think that nobody really in the Congress on serious thought wants to make his burden any greater than necessary. I think that the report of the committee The drafts of which will be ready in the morning for the committee members. Some of the Democrats are working on it now, and the Republicans and the people that have supported it, all of them now have indicated some support on the committee. I think that report must be accepted in some fashion by the House of Representatives so that it can become a document which lays out what the basis was for the Congress and for the committee's actions.
That was Jack Brooks, Democratic member from Texas of the House Judiciary Committee. With us in our studio right now, the Secretary of the Interior, Rogers Morton. Secretary, we understand you are going to stay on in the Ford administration.
Yes, I have been privileged to have been asked by, I guess, President Ford just tomorrow, Vice President Ford, if I would stay on, and I'm delighted to serve in any way I can.
Let me take you back one moment and ask for your comments on Mr. Nixon's speech tonight.
Well, of course, for me, it was a sad time. It was a great privilege for me to serve in the Nixon cabinet. And I know that the whole events of Watergate overrode and overlaid the other activities of the government, many of which I was very proud. I thought we were doing a good job in many areas. So it was a sad occasion for me, but I think that he spelled it out as he saw it. I think he was without rancor. He didn't. He seemed to have no bitterness in his heart. And I think there is a contribution that he can make. And it was a thing that we had to live through. It was historical in every sense of the word.
Do you think, Mr. Secretary, that he committed an impeachable offense?
Well, I guess so, because based on the actions of the Congress, or at least the way it was, but it's a matter of a guess. I don't know what I'm not a lawyer. I was very uncomfortable with it. I felt that the thing was accelerated emotionally and in many cases beyond reason. But I know that the Judiciary Committee of the House worked at this thing and worked at it in good conscience. And I really am not a person to judge on that. I have great affection for Mr. Nixon. I've known him for a long time, and therefore I don't think I can make a judgment on it.
Mr. Secretary, as we talk here, we're waiting for the appearance of Ronald Ziegler, the White House news secretary, at the White House. So if I interrupt you suddenly,
I'll understand.
What do you look forward to in the Ford administration?
Of course, I look forward to the most exciting time in the world because our department is really beginning to write American history. We're beginning to develop the resources in a much more balanced way than ever before. We're beginning to accept the challenge of domestic energy. We're beginning to solve some of the difficult problems in our relationships with the American Indians. So I'm excited about what we have to look forward to. And I was excited about the same thing before all of this took place. But I just know that Mr. Ford is interested in what we're doing. I know that the Congress is interested in what we're doing. I look forward to a very keen relationship and a very friendly and cooperative relationship with the Congress. And I think this is going to have a very, very good effect on the performance of government across the board.
Will it be a different kind of administration?
Yes, I think it will. I think it'll be a more open administration. I think it'll be an administration with a great deal more congressional involvement and congressional communications.
Do you think you will be closer to the president, to the new president, than you were to the one who was going
out? Well, I think that closeness is a very hard thing to define. I was always able to communicate with President Nixon. I was always able to get time when I needed it, and I always worked well with his staff. And I'm sure that this will be the case with Mr. Ford. Jerry and I are old friends. We've known each other a long time. I came into the House just as he ascended to the minority leadership. He's very much interested in what we're doing, so I look forward to a very fine relationship.
You are, of course, another who began your relationship with the Vice President in the House of Representatives. This is one of his great strengths.
I think so, too. You know, Gerald Ford is a man of destiny. History has given him to us at a very, very appropriate time. He is a person who's just as solid as he can be, and yet he has all the sensitivity, I think, that is needed for leadership. I just think we're a very fortunate nation to have him.
under these circumstances.
Dean, if I can turn you to politics for a moment, what now is going to happen in the 1974 congressional elections?
Well, following some of the analysis that George Bush has made, I never felt that we were down on our uppers to the extent that a lot of people implied. I felt that we were doing better, and I also feel very strongly that the personality and the general impact of the man himself, the candidate himself, is a very determining factor in who wins an election in this day and age. And I think we're going to do well. I think the program is good. I think we've got to wrestle with the problems of the economy. We've got to wrestle with inflation. But if we make a conscientious effort to do this, and we will make that effort, I am just sure that we're going to do well in the fall.
Would you have done so well if Mr. Nixon had not left office?
Well, this is a speculation. So we would have done as well, or so we wouldn't have done as well. What good does that speculation do? I don't know. I think there's no question about the Watergate cloud was over the administration. We have been now relieved of that. And through a very, very fine action of the president, he put the national interest first. And obviously, I think this enhances our position.
Secretary Morton, thank you very much for coming up and talking to us this evening after these momentous developments of the past 1 hour and 40 minutes now. At the White House, we are still waiting for the appearance of Ronald Ziegler. Suppose we bring back in Reed Collins and Charles Osgood, and we'll interrupt you, gentlemen, if we see Ronald Ziegler.
All right, why don't you do that, Neil, and you'll be interrupting us and Paris also. Our correspondent, Peter Kalischer, is going to join our conversation. In Paris, Peter, are you there?
I'm here.
You, your current base of operations recently, through death, passed the torch, president-wise, and I wonder what the Parisian view of the doings in Washington tonight may be.
Well, they haven't been apprised, or at least, let's say, they haven't heard the president. It's still in the early morning hours here, and it wasn't put on the air. But I think you can say that France will be less affected by the passing of Richard Nixon in the White House as in the manner of his going. As far as the French go, American foreign policy is wrapped up in Henry Kissinger. And now that Richard Nixon has left and Kissinger remains, the French are pretty certain that there's not going to be any change. There's sometimes close, sometimes irritating relations with two countries will go on as before.
Is there any indication that France might alter its view now in view of what might be a supposed interregnum weakness on the part of the United States? Might France conceivably get a little further away as a NATO ally, for example?
I doubt it. I think that as far as a military NATO ally, France is as far as it can get, and it's going to stay there. Economically, the only effect that we've been able to see in the last few days is the dollar gaining against the franc as the prospect of Nixon's resignation increased.
But there have been no crowds down in the street singing adieu, adieu, as they one time did to the late President de Gaulle?
Hardly. First of all, Paris is a deserted city. It's August. Everybody's on vacation. The crowds in the streets are tourists.
Not Frenchmen. Peter?
Not that you can see them in a crowd. And the fact that the Frenchman is caught in Paris, he probably denies he's a Frenchman because he's embarrassed of being here.
I see. I didn't know it was bad form to be a Frenchman in Paris in August, but
terrible form.
A terrible form. Peter Kalischer, it was kind of you to join us at this wee hour in Paris, France.
We reacted the effort on the part of President Nixon and also Vice President Ford to create the impression that there is going to be continuity here, that the policies are going to stay the same, have been successful. The people that we've talked to seem to expect that there aren't going to be any major changes. Among the things that were done to emphasize the continuity are statements that that were made in the course of the day, in some cases off the record, not for recording, but statements to the effect that as far as the Defense Department was concerned, there was not going to be any special emergency alert issued. As far as the State Department is concerned, Vice President Ford spent an hour and 40 minutes with Secretary Kissinger, and then tonight, in the one concrete announcement that he had to make, said that Secretary Kissinger would continue as Secretary of State. And I think that that is really all that it would take to reassure on the most important international questions the peoples of the world.
That and the tremendous communication capacity we now have, only deep tragedy seems the intervention of tremendous events catches the world by surprise. They knew, this nation knew, probably yesterday and of a certainty today, and hours before the event, the coming of the event. So I suppose that accounts for Europe sleeping and Tel Aviv sleeping and not really having to react to an event for which they had the shadow falling across them days before. Let's get back to the issue of the president's former cabinet men who are sustaining their loyalty, many of them at least, to their former chief. Dan Blackburn of CBS station KNX in Los Angeles has talked to two of them.
One of the president's oldest and closest friends says he feels Mr. Nixon rose to meet the demands of the occasion and delivered an excellent, if tragic, farewell address. Former White House counselor and one-time health, education, and welfare secretary Robert Finch, who was once described as almost a brother to the president, says that he watched the speech with a deep sense of sorrow.
A tragic occasion for the whole country when we have, for the first time, incumbent president step down. And even though I've been away from the White House for 2 years, I most of us and all citizens have enough sense of the nature, the unique nature of that office, I guess most important in the world, which we never escape. And so it's a sort of a combination of sorrow and hope.
Finch adds that he believes Vice President Ford will restore a sense of unity and purpose. He is among many longtime Nixon friends in Los Angeles. Another is the president's former communications director, Herb Klein, who was recently on the receiving end of some sharp presidential comments in the latest batch of White House tapes. Klein voices regret at the resignation.
I watched the speech with a great deal of emotion about it. I felt very badly for him. I feel very badly for the country that he's had to step down. He's had a tremendous career, and I think the fact that the mistake was made early in the Watergate situation where it wasn't cleared up and exposed to the public has brought down a man with this type of thing. I think the encouraging thing is that fortunately the country is set up with a system so that we have a strong vice president, one who I think will carry on policies which have been successful both internationally and domestically.
Klein suggests that Mr. Nixon might someday in the future be given a special post as a roving ambassador to serve the nation further in the area in which he is most experienced, that of foreign policy. This is Dan Blackburn for CBS News in Los Angeles.
Neil Strausser?
Here in Washington, continuing comment on the announced plan of Mr. Nixon to resign and the coming succession to the presidency of Gerald Ford, Republican Senator John Tower of Texas, who was one of Mr. Nixon's strongest supporters in the Congress until this week. Tower said that Ford is a creature of the Congress, and he has no scars in his relations with us, and relations with him will be very good. Representative Bella Abzug, the Democrat of New York, an outspoken supporter of impeachment, said constitutional government and the impeachment process had been vindicated by President Nixon's announcement that he will resign. She said, "The would-be king is gone. Long live the presidency." Representative Robert McClory of Illinois, the second-ranking Republican on the House Judiciary Committee, and the man who voted for two of those proposed articles of impeachment with great regret, said of Mr. Nixon's announcement that, "I'm very grateful for that decision. I think the people now will stop and reflect on his great accomplishment as president, and he will have a great deal of opportunity to reestablish his stature as world leader." Those are the comments of Robert McClory. And I think, gentlemen, we might pause to think about Mr. Nixon's place in history as we get on, far on, down the road on this. How much better it might have been had he been a one-term president. It's happened so often, a couple of times in this century at least. We think of the domestic achievements of Lyndon Johnson in his first few years. and domestic achievements of Woodrow Wilson also in his first term before the World War I years. In the House gallery now is CBS News correspondent Al Walker, and Al, I assume you've been getting reaction there.
Yes, Neil. We talked to a few of the congressmen on the House side, but some of the more influential ones. Carl Albert, the Speaker of the House, came up. John Rhodes, the Minority Leader. Jack Brooks, I heard you quote some of Jack Brooks' reaction to the speech. Generally, here on the House side, the reaction was quite favorable to Richard Nixon's farewell address. The congressmen seemed to think that it was conciliatory. They pointed to the part of the speech where he was willing to admit his own mistakes, and they all seemed relieved that, as some had suggested or anticipated, that he did not take the tack of turning upon the Congress or trying to blame them for hounding him out of office. And so the question was on the mind of many, seems to be answered, that there is no mood, there is no stomach for the continuation of the impeachment process from this side to continue to hound private citizen Richard Nixon any further.
They didn't, Hal, get the confession of error that that some wanted, at least not in very direct terms. Mr. Nixon, as I recall, said that some of his decisions have been wrong, but they were made in what he thought was the best interest of the nation, which was about the only direct comment he made on his Watergate troubles.
Well, that seemed to be enough, Neil, for the legislators up here, who I think generally, in spite of some of the rhetoric we heard earlier, really did not have a great stomach for continuing the process of impeachment. It was interesting, too, in talking to John Rhodes, the minority leader now, we got some of his thoughts about what may have happened to Richard Nixon in his presidency. It was Rhodes who suggested that perhaps Richard Nixon, in a preoccupation with the peace of the world, that may have been his undoing. Rhodes suggested that because of such a preoccupation that Richard Nixon left unto others some of the important work that he himself perhaps should have taken to task personally. Rhodes was among those called to the White House prior to Richard Nixon announcing his decision, and it was a very interesting and personal insight into what he thought was the thinking of Richard Nixon.
Of course, that was one of the original explanations offered for the Watergate affair on the part of Richard Nixon in one of his early speeches when this whole thing began to break, and yet we must recognize that those tapes, even those made public this week of conversations 6 days after Watergate, showed a great attention to detail on many points not having to do with world peace.
That's true, Neil. I was just thinking that one of the other things that Rhodes said as part of his conversation with the president, against some of the insights of the things that were going on in those days when so many rumors were flying, when the congressional leaders were called to the White House yesterday, he seemed to suggest that what Richard Nixon was looking for, what President Nixon was looking for at that time, was a confirmation, an actual confirmation from the people up here as to what his status was in the Congress. And Rhodes indicated that it was rather his sad duty to tell Richard Nixon what so many people seemed to know already, that he really did not stand a chance of avoiding an impeachment vote in the House, and that it was up to the Senate leaders to indicate to him that his fortunes were really nil on the Senate side. And then with that confirmation, Rhodes seemed to suggest to us that the final decision became concrete in the president's mind.
Now, I'm just curious. We've had so much comment from the House itself tonight. Did many of the representatives just simply stay in their offices to watch the speeches?
No, not too many. There are not very many people around Capitol Hill tonight. The leaders stayed because we specifically asked them so that we could have their reaction here in Capitol Hill. No, I think this was a private night for most of the legislators, who, in spite of their differences, I'm sure felt the full gravity of what was going on here tonight. And it was not the sort of thing that they really felt, I guess, they wanted to share publicly. I think most of the members of the House and the Senate were at home, I guess, with their own families, like so many other Americans, as this news broke upon them.
Let us switch over to the Senate side now with a proviso that, again, we think that Ronald Ziegler is close to appearing at the White House, but let's switch over for the moment to George Herman on the Senate side.
And here I am on the Senate side. You just let me know when Mr. Ziegler appears. Neil, I've been talking to a series of senators in answer to the question that you asked Hal. Quite a number of senators stayed here, watched Mr. Nixon on their television sets in their offices, and then came out onto the plaza where all three networks have their cameras and their microphones set up and granted interviews and talked to us. And if I had to sum up, let's say, five interviews, I would, into a single sentence or a single, distill it into a single emotion, I would say that they were moved by the president's resignation. In general, they were a trifle disappointed that he did not address himself more directly to the question of his own personal guilt or innocence, but simply contented himself with saying that his political power base had eroded in the Congress and he didn't feel he could carry on his fight for vindication. Quite a number of them had hoped that in this speech he would clear the air a little bit more by making some direct reference to his role in some of the still disputed Watergate matters. But in general, they felt themselves much moved by what had happened. They felt that they should let some dust settle and let their own emotions cool and recollect all of this in tranquility before they gave a definitive impression, a definitive answer on how they felt. One man, one exception, was Edward Brooke of Massachusetts, who, as you know, today introduced into the Senate a bill calling for a joint congressional resolution saying that it was the sense of Congress that the president should not be prosecuted anywhere else for anything that may have happened in the Watergate case. And I asked Senator Brooke whether he thought the speech had done the job, because Brooke said today that if the president did not admit to some guilt, some culpability before the nation, he would not press his resolution. And Senator Brooke, although moved and saddened by the president's speech, said no, the speech did not meet that qualification. And he said he would not now press the bill for immunity for the president. He said it would go to the judiciary committees of both houses, but he felt it would not muster a majority in either committee. And I asked, would it muster the vote of Edward Brooke of Massachusetts? And Edward Brooke of Massachusetts said in one word, no. So that particular bill for immunity for the president now seems, because of the wording and the tone of the president's speech, that particular bill for immunity may be dead. But there are others who think that no matter what happens now, we should put Watergate behind us, and we should free the president from the nation from the spectacle of future prosecutions, from having Mr. Nixon, an ex-president of the United States, as he will be tomorrow, dragged through court after court, and they may try to revive the Brooke bill for immunity in some other fashion.
George Herman, thank you very much. Let's go back to Reed Collins in New York.
And thank you, Neil Strauser and George. Our live CBS News coverage of the resignation of President Richard Nixon will continue.